Blog Talk Radio.
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Bowling Green, EO11, EO11. It's all a state of mind, whether or not you find that place down there or heaven. In the meantime, EO11, EO11, EO11. Show me a man without a dream, and I'll show you a man that's dead, real dead. Once I had me a dream, but that dream got kicked in the head, dream dead. I nearly had me that chauffeur and that block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. I nearly had me that penthouse, all them stacks of Bowling Green, E11, 11. Some judge is gonna say I'm putting you away for 84 years and 7. In the meantime, EO11, 11.
Oh, yeah. Well, James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective on Patriot Nation Radio here at Blog Talk. BlogTalk.com, rather, that is. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And looking around through here, got some crazy stuff happening, man. Crazy, crazy stuff. Of course, the verdict is in. If you haven't heard, Derek Chauvin has been found guilty on all counts. We fully expect the rioting to begin within the next 30 minutes, if it hasn't already. I've been talking with everybody about this today, and it's not going to matter. Either you know, they riot because he's convicted, or they riot because he is acquitted, and that's the plan. It doesn't have anything to do with really not so much even with Derek Chauvin and what happened here. And a lot of people have been beating this thing up on all the different issues and all the different questions of restraint and resisting arrest and how much force was needed to do this. And I'm not even going to get in the middle of that crap because there's a million people out there talking about it already. But there are crazier things going on. What is it, Tuesday? I guess Sunday. Maybe it was Sunday. Maxine Waters. Crazy, mad Maxine Waters is in Minneapolis, Minnesota, wherever this is. She's in Minnesota, wherever this is. And she gives a speech. Now, the speech in and of itself is about 3 minutes, 4 minutes. We're not even going to listen to the speech because it's not what was said in the speech. It was what was said in this kind of rolling quasi-presser that was going on, this moving question and answer session that she had with some journalists after she gave her speech. And this is where the incendiary comments come in. Some of you have probably heard some of it. If you haven't, you're going to love this. Now, again, this was not the speech. This was not the speech she gave. She gave a 3 or 4 minute standard boilerplate speech. I'm here to stand for justice. I'm here to stand with you people in the streets because justice, you know, justice, blah, 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 yakety schmackety. I'm here for justice. And the Republican white racists, well, they hate justice, see? And we're about justice. And I'm standing here with you guys because of justice. So she leaves. She says what she says. Then she leaves. And as she's leaving, the reporters, the cameramen, the press start asking her different questions. Here's what she had to say on post-speech there as the Chauvin jury was going to sequester to deliberate.
What's your opinion of the police reform efforts that are being discussed right here? And do you think that any of them have any hope of being enacted through maybe this Congress?
Well, I am not happy that we have talked about police reform for so long. And it's not only this piece of legislation, but it's been years. I confronted the police chief, Daryl Gates, in Los Angeles years ago about the killing of Eula Love and about the chokehold and about all of that. We've been fighting for so many years for reform, reform, reform. And so, yes, I would like to see the bill in Congress pass on police reform, but I know that the right wing, the racists, are opposed to it, and I don't know what's going to happen to it, but I know this, we've got to stay in the street, and we've got to demand justice.
As a black man, despite all of the efforts, I feel like nothing changes. And George Floyd is waking so many people up, yet nothing has happened, despite the rhetoric. Like, what needs to happen that's different this year than all the years before?
We're looking for a guilty verdict. We're looking for a guilty verdict, and we're looking to see if all of the talk that took place and has been taking place after they saw what happened to George Floyd, if nothing does not happen, then we know that we've got to not only stay in the street, but we've got to fight for justice. But I am very hopeful, and I hope that we're going to get a verdict that is say guilty, guilty, guilty. And if we don't, we cannot go away.
And not just manslaughter, right? I mean...
Oh, no, not manslaughter. No.
Murder.
I don't know if it's in the first degree, but as far as I'm concerned, it's first degree.
First degree
murder. Even though murder is not one of the charges Chauvin was indicted on. She wants a murder conviction.
Well, we got to stay on the street. And we've got
first
to
degree
get
murder.
More active. We've got to get more confrontational. We've got to make sure that they know that we need this.
What do you think about this curfew tonight?
I don't think anything about curfew. I don't think anything about curfew. I don't know what curfew means. Curfew means that I want you all to stop talking. I want you to stop meeting. I want you to stop gathering. I don't agree with that.
Are you going
to
stay out here?
No, I'm not going to stay out here. I came here from Washington just to be here to make sure that I let my voice be heard among all of those who have been putting so much time on the street. And so I'm hopeful that the protests will continue. Thank you.
Where does police accountability come from?
Well, I want to tell you that the mayors and the city council people, commissioners all over this country, have got to rein in the police. They have their budgets. They give them overtime pay. They make sure that they have terrific benefits. They can cut all of that out. And so it is up to the local city council members, the police chief, not the police chief, because the police chiefs are mostly intimidated by the police unions. And so it is the elected officials who have got to rein in the police.
Congressman,
you have gone crazy.
Getting rid of the police completely abolished.
Straight up out your mind.
Well, you've got to make sense out of it. And what you've got to say is,
How are we going to make sense out of this, Maxie?
You're
not making sense out of you, girl.
Really,
go ahead.
If you have people on the street who may have mental problems, who are
like you,
they don't need a police. What they need is a psychiatrist.
They do not need a police.
They need others who can deal with these issues. And so we've got to.
Hey man, this dude is messing with me. Can somebody call me a police to help me out?
What's your message to young black people in this community that live and grow up here in Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center?
Well, my message to young black people is this: that we know that there is a lot of unfairness in the system. We know that oftentimes...
Had been real unfair to you, Maxine.
They are searched.
Been pretty unfair to your district.
And they stand to lose their lives.
Which
and
looks like one of the more well-to-do areas outside of Mogadishu.
Who understand it and who will stand with them and who will fight for them, who love them.
Oh, Jesus Christ. No, that's okay. That's okay, Maxie. Maxie. It's enough. Mother of pearl. So I would imagine if we get on Fox, if we get somewhere, that we can probably get live footage of the celebratory riots, the mostly peaceful celebration riots, of the mostly peaceful celebrating rioters that Chauvin is guilty, and not just guilty, 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 guilty. Sadly, however, he's guilty of manslaughter. Second degree unintentional murder, third degree murder, and second degree manslaughter. Second degree unintentional murder, third degree murder, and second degree manslaughter. Not dead air. I'm just thinking about this. This is not going to be enough. This is not going to be enough. This is not as fitting a pound of flesh as these people want. I think secretly they were probably hoping that they couldn't get a conviction because then they would be justified in burning down the country again like they did this summer. Earlier in the day, while the jury was sequestered in their deliberations, President Joe Biden said he had spoken with Floyd's family, and then he weighed in on the trial saying, "I'm praying the verdict is the right verdict," which is, well, I think it's overwhelming in my view. Later, at a White House briefing, when they asked Jen Psaki what the president had meant, she repeatedly refused to elaborate. She wasn't going to go into it, not going to answer it, didn't want this question even asked, saying only that the president would not comment further until the verdict had actually been reached. So we know what's going on here. This is not going to be enough, and that's what they're going to say. And I can't believe, let me find Fox. Let me find maybe One America. Who am I going to there? OANN. There's a guy. I wonder if it's out in Portland. They may be going out in Portland, and they've probably gone there. Because they've been rioting there, they've nonstop. You know, it's easy for us, and I think it is taking the path of least resistance when we shrug our shoulders at these things. And not only Maxine Waters, but she's a good example of it. And we just had a terrific example of it there. But There are many. And I'm not gonna lay this down on just the left, because there are plenty of mean-spirited people on the right who would say these same kind of things were the situation reversed. You guys have seen the everybody on social media has probably seen some unflattering picture of Michelle Obama, you know, where she's, I don't know, standing in a skirt and trying to adjust her penis without anybody noticing, and they make fun, and, you know, that's just mean, people. I mean, you know, and you get it on both sides. It's wrong. Doesn't matter whether you do it or not. But when we come into something like this, when we come into an issue, a hot button issue, alleged police brutality, alleged systemic racism, which I have no idea what that means. I don't know what systemic racism means. Does that mean that a system is racist? What system? The entire system and all its subsystems? Everything is racist? I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm sure they probably got some kind of made-up definition for it, but I don't buy it. You shouldn't either. And, of course, the reason being for that is because it's bullshit. But she has done this for years. Maxine Waters. She's done this for years. She's defended by Hollywood. She's defended by fellow Democrats. She's defended by Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi says, apologize. Apologize for what? What does she need to apologize for? She's just walking in truth. Loyal opposition, pip, pip, bit of all right, that sort of thing. When we know differently. We know differently. Those were calls, those were incitements to violence. Not dead air, think about it, incitement to violence. I mean, the mask is completely off these people that are the active propagandists and foot soldiers and strategic planners for the progressive Marxist left. It's not that hard to figure out who they are. I mean, it really is. It's just not that hard to figure out who they are. Well, as usual, Maxine Waters and this sort of behavior did not escape the watchful eye of our pal Tucker Carlson. Last night he had some things to say about this, and it's pretty good, and not that long, because, you know, Tucker, every now and then he gets going, and it's off to the races. This, for him, for Tucker, this one's short. This is about 7 minutes, but it's still spot on. Still some great stuff. His take on a career on the part of Maxine Waters. A decades-long career when it comes to inciting violence. Check it out. Whoops.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson.
Sorry, Tuck. No. Now let's check it out.
So how do you respond to people like this? Well, the only thing you can do is tell the truth about who they are. Maxine Waters is someone who supports mob violence. She always has supported. We have known this. Almost 30 years ago, when race riots leveled huge parts of Los Angeles, Maxine Waters cheered them on. People want to know why I'm not saying exactly what they want me to say, she said at the time. They want me to walk out and watch, like black people did in the 60s, and say, cool it, baby, cool it. Well, I'm sorry. The fact of the matter is, whether we like it or not, riot is the voice of the unheard. It was quite a riot. 58 people were killed during those riots in 1992. Many more were seriously injured. One of those most seriously injured was a man called Reginald Denny. He was beaten nearly to death. He was left with permanent brain damage. Why? Because he looked the wrong way. He had the wrong color. A mob pulled him out of his truck and smashed his skull with a cinder block. It happened on camera. If you haven't seen it, here it is.
The one image that I will never get over, and it will go to my grave with me, and that's the image of Reginald Denny being pulled out of his truck and being beaten mercilessly.
Denny would undergo multiple surgeries to repair the extensive damage to his face.
How could you watch that and not feel sick? No normal person could. But Maxine Waters defended the men who did that. The ringleader of the mob who pulled Reginald Denny out of his truck was a man called Damian Williams. The day that the jury was set to deliver a verdict in the Williams case, Maxine Waters visited Damian Williams' home and offered her support. Quote, "We have an opportunity for justice to prevail," Waters said. In the end, Williams served only a short part of his sentence. He was released from prison. Then what do you think happened? He went on to murder someone else. Waters has paid no price for this. She kept rising in the Democratic hierarchy. No one told her to stop inciting violence. So naturally she did. A few years ago, she called for mobs to attack Trump supporters.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome.
These aren't aberrations. This is a decades-long theme. What do we conclude from it? The obvious. Maxine Waters doesn't believe in the Western understanding of justice or self-government. She believes in mob violence for political ends. That's why she's been calling for it for decades. How has the Democratic Party responded to this? They've rewarded her for it. Maxine Waters is now the chairman of one of the most powerful committees in the entire Congress, the House Financial Services. Maxine Waters oversees Wall Street. That was her reward. Tonight you're hearing Republicans call for Maxine Waters to lose her chairmanship or be expelled from the Congress. Those are obviously worthy goals, but let's not lie to ourselves. That's not going to happen. Leading Democrats aren't going to punish Maxine Waters because they're not embarrassed of Maxine Waters because they agree with Maxine Waters. A CNN reporter asked Nancy Pelosi today if Maxine Waters should apologize for what she said, for whipping the mob into violence. No, Pelosi said, quote, "Maxine talks about confrontation in the manner of the civil rights movement." What an insult, by the way, to the actual civil rights movement. Then she was asked if Maxine Waters' comments incited violence, and Pelosi said this, quote, "No, absolutely not." So in the face of that grotesque display, silence from the Democratic Party's usual moral chorus. The Lincoln Project, which tells you it so deeply cares about democracy, is not running ads against Maxine Waters, obviously. David Frum hasn't scolded her in The Atlantic. He's not going to. The Washington Post doesn't seem to care. Why is that? Why aren't they saying anything? Obviously, they support Maxine Waters. They think her calls for violence are justified. Or at least they're afraid to say otherwise, which is a distinction without a difference. This is true. And the sooner we understand it, the better. Here's a clip from a show called Burn It Down with Kim Brown. You can get it on iTunes. You can watch it on any number of social media platforms, none of which has even considered censoring it. As you watch, ask yourself, how much influence should someone like this have over the country where your family lives?
For the record, I support all that. I support them looting the damn Dollar Tree. I support the looting of what other did they loot? Like the Advanced Auto Parts. I remember last year they looted the Target. I support all that. Loot all that. Do you know why? Because black people and marginalized and oppressed people could loot every store in this whole country for 200 years. It would not even come close to the debt that America owes us. Tear all that up. Tear it up. Because really, that's the language. That's the only language this country understands.
Tear it up, she says. Burn it down. So how are the people in charge responding to this? Well, we're pretty sure the FBI isn't at Kim Brown's house tonight. We're confident that 60 Minutes isn't planning some extensive hit piece on her. No, those are reserved for Florida governors. In America's many newsrooms, Kim Brown is not considered a threat to anyone. She's considered an ally. Who's the threat? It's people who didn't vote for Joe Biden. They must be hounded into submission by the American news media. Here's the latest example. A few days ago, an ABC reporter in Utah brought a TV camera to the home of a paramedic, just a paramedic, not anyone with power, a guy who helps injured people. And the TV crew showed up because this paramedic had made the mistake of donating $10 to Kyle Rittenhouse's legal defense fund. The website was hacked, and his donation, the paramedic's donation, became public. So ABC Local in Utah decided to destroy the paramedic's life and put his family in peril. He stepped out of line. That's not allowed. No one outside of Utah seemed to notice this. just as no one outside of Stillwater, Minnesota seemed to notice when a mob showed up at the home of the county attorney there. The mob demanded more charges filed in the case of that cop who accidentally shot someone last week. They didn't petition the court to get new charges. They went right to physical threats. That used to be very rare in this country. When it happened, we clamped down on it hard. But no one's clamping down on it, so, of course, it's happening more often. This weekend, another mob came to the home of what they thought belonged to one of the witnesses in Derek Chauvin's defense. They smeared pig blood all over the house. What do you call that? Well, it's textbook. It's witness intimidation. Fighting things like that, witness intimidation, is precisely why we have a civil rights division at the Justice Department, to protect people's civil rights, especially the right to speak freely at criminal trials. That's what due process is. Where was Joe Biden's DOJ today? Swarming the scene to protect the civil rights of everyone involved, to protect the legal system itself? Nope. Sorry. They were too busy rounding up more elderly poor people who made the mistake of stepping inside the Capitol on January 6th. So let's stop lying to ourselves about what's happening here. It's very obvious.
Yeah, it's extremely obvious. And nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. She's not going to be expelled from the Senate. She's not... They had drawn up some articles of censure. I don't even think that's going to happen. I don't think she's even going to get that. But on a... I saw this. I was scrolling through. OJ wants Derek Chauvin to be found guilty, and I guess he probably knows, and he probably knows a little bit about excessive force. OJ Simpson said Tuesday Derek Chauvin used unnecessary force in his apprehension of George Floyd while defending Representative Maxine Waters' call to arms regarding her Saturday comments on Chauvin's trial. I thought it was a classic case of depraved indifference. I thought it was unnecessary force, and no matter which side you're on. I think, he continued, everybody would pretty much have to agree that if those deputies and Chauvin would have got off George Floyd, there was no chance George Floyd was going to get up and try and run, trying to tag them in handcuffs. That didn't seem to be his personality. That didn't seem to be his personality. He wouldn't be in his personality to try and attack cops in handcuffs, but it was totally within his personality to point a loaded gun at a pregnant woman threatening to kill her if she didn't give up drugs he thought she had. Dude was a thug, man. He's a felon. He wasn't a good man, but an honest man. Should he have died? I don't know. Other people were debating that. I'm not going to jump around it. He did. That's for damn sure. That didn't seem to be his personality. Simpson continued, not satisfied at having proven himself as stupid at this point. It seems that the only problem was that he had a little problem with claustrophobia, I guess, and the smallness of the backseat of that police car, which had to be pretty tough on a guy his size. I bet that pregnant chick has a little problem seeing guns these days since she had one pointed at her by this dude. Simpson also said he understood what Maxine Waters was saying regarding her call to arms. Not physical harm, but a cause to work and to vote. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy called a full House vote on Tuesday to censure Waters for her comments, in which all House Democrats predictably voted along party lines to protect her. Not dead air, just thinking about who in the hell cares what this guy has to say. Damn near cut his wife's head off and murdered a good Samaritan who just happened upon the scene. He's an expert on excessive force. I guess he probably is. But who in, I've got to, I mean, I'm going to ridicule the guy, but I think I'm really, I kind of need to toss a brick bat towards Breitbart for even giving this guy any kind of legitimacy. And he's not legitimate. He's a murderer. He's a crook. He's, if George Floyd had a brother, he'd probably look like O.J. Simpson. Yeah. If George Floyd had a brother, he'd probably look like O.J. Simpson. I think they could have probably come up with a better story. I mean, I just can't see them. To me, it's almost like giving O.J. Simpson legitimacy because, like, his opinion counts on any damn thing. Pieces. Well, I'll tell you what, we're down at the bottom of the, yeah, we are at the bottom of the hour, aren't we? Let's go ahead and roll on over this way. I want to find something for us to listen to, and then we will be back with more of Conservative's Perspective right here, Patriot Nation Radio on blogtalkradio.com.
Drink to me only, that's all I ask, and I will drink to you.
How long I've been on?
I don't care if the sun don't shine, I do my drinking in the evening time when I'm in Las Vegas. You can sit in the sun and camp, I get my color from a sunray lamp when I'm in Las Vegas. I love the laughs and love the life, there's fun of every kind. Next time I come, I'll bring my wife. I'll do that if I lose my mind. A wife in Vegas, take my advice. It's like going to China with a sack of rice. But I love Las Vegas. I love Vegas in the summer. I love it in the fall. I love Vegas, may I say that it's a gasser, yeah. I love Vegas like it's Egypt and I am Nasser. I love Vegas every moment. It's my favorite atmosphere. I love Vegas. Why do I love Vegas? Because my money's here. I love Vegas when I'm winning. I love it when I lose. I love Vegas like the army loves its manuals. I love Vegas like Sinatra loves Jack Daniels. I love Vegas every moment. Oh, Mr. Untrotter, I must cheer. Hey, you smart boy. I love Vegas. Ach, du lieber, do I love Vegas. Because my blood is here. I love Vegas when I'm loaded.
I love Vegas, just like Khrushchev loves being indignant. More than even my wife Jeannie loves being pregnant. I love Vegas every moment. When I leave, I shed a tear. Oh, I love Vegas. Jesus Christ, do I love Vegas. I'll make it good and clear. It's because my girl's right here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, you know what? I was just thinking, listening to that song. We, we need some underdogs, man. And I think we've got a nation full of underdogs out there. They're just waiting. Bunch of shoeshine boys just waiting out there to hear that call. Jump into the phone booth. Underdog. It has been, honestly, in this country, and I've been here, I've been around a little while. I'm 58 years old and an ardent student of history, American history in particular. And every generation. Since the 1960s. And what I'm talking about here are generations of conservative thinkers, of conservative whites. And those who in the early days, and there weren't that many of them, those who had the public ear weren't really saying anything different from what they say now. Our institutions are under attack. Okay, the things that make America so decidedly American, yeah. Our Constitution, our judicial system, our law enforcement organizations, our education systems, our media and information systems, our entertainment systems, corporations, all this stuff, man. They have been constantly under attack, and they've been under attack for almost 60 years. And, you know, dominion is complete in Hollywood, in the newspaper business, in the television news business, in magazines, in social media. That liberal domination has it's won. Crushed a lot of us out. Some trucker almost got killed just after the verdict. Long-haul trucker driving through Minnesota. And the protesters tried to stop the truck. They started throwing things at it. They tried to pull him out. He was able to make a turn. He was coming around a turn, I guess, to a tight city street, and that's, you know, you had to slow down and be careful, and that's why, you know, and then the rioters started jumping on the truck and trying to attack him, but he got out of there and he wasn't hurt. It's probably already started. I was listening earlier. I'm sure they're probably out in the streets. It's going to start out as celebration. It's going to start out as rejoicing, and then stuff's going to start going up. Yeah, stuff's going to start going up. Probably just waiting for it to get dark, and then it's going to be on. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I hope I'm wrong. It's almost 8 o'clock here on the East Coast. It's 15 to late Eastern Standard Time, and I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But it was going to happen. And everybody I've talked to today, when we were talking about this, that were paying attention to this whole Chauvin thing. There was a school of thought, and I read it in a couple of different news sites that I go to, that the jury was of a mindset that these people are going to do whatever, no matter what our verdict comes back as. And so there was speculation that while everybody else said, well, you know, a guilty verdict or a not guilty verdict in this case is impossible, they don't have any choice, they're going to come back with one, there were those who said, well, they may be of a mindset that they don't care. But evidently, either the evidence or they were of a mindset where they did indeed care. And I can understand that. These people are fighting dirty, man. They're doxing, you know, they'll publicize the names of jurors, their addresses. What if this guy's got a family? See, the people in Black Lives Matter and Antifa that are detailed to act violently, they don't care. They don't care that they're vandalizing and destroying a home. They don't care that they're terrorizing, you know, a woman and her kids inside the house who have no idea what's going to happen to them. They think that this may be their last moments on earth. Somebody comes through that door. These people have mental problems. They're angry people. And they were recruited because of these issues. The higher-ups in Antifa, the higher-ups in BLM, they recruit people like this because this is what these people like. This is their venue. This is their outlet. And when you have complicitous prosecuting attorneys that aren't charging these people, who are releasing them without bail, knowing that they're not going to come back for a court date and not making a big deal about it because they don't want them to come back for a court date because they're not interested in prosecuting these guys because they think what they did was okay. You know, it's almost come out. We used to think that it was a two-tiered system of justice, but I believe that it may well be a three-tiered system of justice. You've got the elites, you know, the upper tier, the first tier, the elites, the James Comeys, the Hillary Clintons, the Bill Clintons, the Barack Obamas, then you have their acolytes, their minions, their facilitators. And then in the third tier, you have their foot soldiers. The people that throw paper cups that have been filled with cement and hardened at cops. People who throw frozen water bottles at cops. That'll hurt you. These people want violence. They dig violence. It's their thing. I'm not exactly sure where it goes. sometimes I think, you know, 75, maybe 80 million, maybe more people voted for Donald Trump in this last election. That's a formidable number to piss off. And I think these people, Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden and Maxine Waters and those of their ilk, the Nancy Pelosi's, the Kamala Harris's, these guys, they mistake forbearance for weakness. Truly, they do. They mistake forbearance for weakness. They've overreached. Every time there's a power grab in the last 35 years that the left has tried to accomplish or work on, they've always overreached. They've overreached and they've stumbled. And the people that are trying this power grab now are not the best and brightest. Nowhere near it. These are third and fourth team scrubs from the Clinton-Obama retread society. That's all these guys are. Seriously, you think Jen Psaki had anything on Sarah Huckabee? On Kaylee? On any of those people? Really? Who is it? Javier Becerra at Health and Human Services? You think he had something on Dr. You think he had more on the ball than Dr. Ben Carson? Really? It is to laugh, America. And while it worries me, this unabashed power grab, and that's all it is. They're just so stupid. I mean, that's our only saving grace here, is that these people are so stupid. But that doesn't mean that they can't blunder into tyranny. They can't blunder their way and stumble into tyranny. Damn right they can. Not dead air, I'm still here. I'm just thinking about this mess. Well, what was really on trial in the George Floyd murder case? What was on trial? Well, Derek Chauvin was on trial for allegedly killing George Floyd. That infamous picture of Derek Chauvin's arrogant face as he held Floyd down and subsequently died in that position. Enough to make anybody dislike him. Everybody saw that picture. Everybody saw the video. Everybody knows what happened. But that's not what he's on trial for, Derek Chauvin, that is. And he's not on trial really so much for killing George Floyd. What he's on trial for, what he's on trial for is being white, with a backup charge of copping while white. We can stop pretending it was anything else, whether generalized police misbehavior towards blacks or what have you, whatever you want to say. Blacks who do not break the law have no more problems with police than anybody else who do not break the law, does not break the law. No, the black people who have problems with cops are black criminals. Even black people know this. Had the Floyd incident involved a black cop rather than Derek Chauvin, even putting the knee on the back and in the neck, it would have never made the news. It didn't matter, which, like I said, I wouldn't have been surprised about the verdict either way. The left is going to riot regardless of the verdict. We also know something else. white America is about ready to put up its dukes and fight back. The only thing we didn't know about this verdict, guilty, not guilty, was if the jury had enough people with enough spine to stand up for the law, and it doesn't look like they did. And then again, we weren't in the courtroom. We don't know what the testimony was. We don't know what the evidence was. Minnesota is full of genuinely nice people that don't like to fight and quarrel, and that type usually avoids unpleasantness by withdrawing in a tight-lipped, hurt silence rather than stand up. So that's why we know where we are vis-a-vis the Chauvin trial. We've known that this was coming for 60 years, and we've just let it gradually seep into our politics, into our daily lives. What is it? Leftist bullying. It's the same thing that kept Latin America aflame for the last 70 years. It was fought off in Chile and Grenada, but it had permanent success in Cuba and in Venezuela. It's what set America against itself in the 60s. This same fight is really what's going on in that Minnesota courtroom. That's what was happening there. Derek Chauvin got a low-tech lynching right out of advise and consent. I am not advocating violence. You will not hear me ever advocate for violence. You will, however, hear me pontificate and advocate frequently for self-defense, for preservation. Not dead air, I'm still here. And speaking of leftist bullying in South America and why that, you know, that place has been that way, this marks the 60th anniversary of the Bay of Pigs invasion. You guys probably, some of you cats may not know about that. Right now in America, the average median age is probably about 39 years and change, maybe close to 40. 40 years only takes you back to 1980. You guys, so there's a lot of people that probably don't know anything about this. It was a disaster. It was 60 years ago this week that an uncertain new president launched an ill-conceived military venture of astonishing naivete. 1,400 U.S.-trained Cuban exiles would land at the Bay of Pigs. It was an unmitigated disaster. Kennedy had learned the hard way not to blindly trust the advice of his decorated military and intelligence chiefs. Now, this was from a Beltway media stalwart and former Democrat White House official, a guy named Lawrence Haas. He wrote this in The Hill on April 12th, last Monday. And yet again, rather than go through the trouble of concocting their own propaganda, Communist Cuba's KGB-founded and mentored media simply transcribed the U.S. Beltway. You think I'm exaggerating? Here's what it says. This comes from the Prensa Latina, and that is Stalinist Cuba's propaganda organ. It's like their TASS or what was the other paper? There were two papers. The state newspapers in Russia, TASS was one of them, Izvestia, I think it was the other. Word for word, it was 60 years ago this week that an uncertain new president, John F. Kennedy, in parentheses, launched an ill-conceived military venture of astonishing naivete. Word for word for word for word. Che Guevara explained the fascinating process that we see so starkly by saying much more valuable than the rural recruits for our Cuban guerrilla force were America media recruits to export our propaganda. In fact, incomplete refutation of the media Democrat Castorwhite spin, the lack of naivete started with the invasion's very beginner and the main booster of this plan. And at that time, it would have been Vice President under Eisenhower, Richard Nixon. Here was a man who bucked the astonishing naivete and treachery of the Beltway establishment to see through and call out Alger Hiss, a communist spy. Nixon was also among the first U.S. officials to buck the astonishing naivete and treachery of the Beltway establishment by calling out and urging the overthrow of the closet Stalinist and Soviet asset, Fidel Castro. And he was doing this at the very moment Castro was being lionized by the U.S. media, the State Department, and even many folks in the Central Intelligence Agency. In fact, this particular military venture that we're talking about was expertly planned and was anything but naive. The astonishing blunders and the naivete were entirely Camelot's. After it dropped into their lap with Nixon's electoral defeat, the new frontiersmen insisted on sticking their manicured fingers in and fumbling with almost everything that was planned on the orders of the Supreme Commander of Operation Overlord. He would have been president at that time, Dwight David Eisenhower. Help the Cubans to the utmost, Eisenhower stressed to his successor while handing over the reins. We cannot let Castro's government go on. For starters, the original invasion plan by the CIA and its military partners, who were all Second World War and Korea vets, picked the Cuban town of Trinidad as the landing site. And this coastal town was 100 miles east of the Bay of Pigs, and it was the site that was originally chosen by the CIA and the military advisors because it was a hotbed of anti-Castro sentiment, and it offered good offloading facilities. Also, the nearby Escambray Mountains crawled with anti-communist guerrillas who were giving the Castroites fits. These would join the invading force that also carried arms for them. Just as importantly, only two major roads led to Trinidad from the north. So, any Castro troops moving into the area would have been sitting ducks for the freedom fighters' small air force. Excuse me just a moment. And we're back. Allergies, man, they blow. They really do. So does my nose. So, sadly, however, landing in this area, this populated area, this town of Trinidad, was decided to be too noisy by the guilt-stricken new frontiersmen. They had a fetish about hiding the U.S. role. This massive secret. Any hint of such a role might discomfort the Latin American street. You see, the new frontiersmen suffered a guilty conscience about this kind of Yankee bullying. And mercy me, what would the UN say? The best and brightest suffered a veritable fit of the vapors just thinking about that. So it was back to the drawing board. They had the perfect plan set up by the perfect planner. Again, Supreme Commander, Operation Overlord. So they came up with a landing site at the Bay of Pigs. It was a desolate swamp. It was worse from a military standpoint, but it had a good chance of success. Given total air superiority, given the complete obliteration of Castro's Air Force, these things were stressed by the military and CIA planners, just as it's stressed here, us talking to it. Idiotically and tragically, 80% of the pre-invasion sorties by the freedom fighter planes from Nicaragua, the essential component to knock out Castro's Air Force on the ground, as originally devised in the plan under the Eisenhower administration, was canceled at the last moment by John Kennedy on the advice of his best and brightest. The U.S. hand after the first strike would be showing. Again, this is a huge secret. No, not really. It never was. So, the flustered and guilt-stricken knights of Camelot, while frantically fanning their blushing faces, nixed the next airstrikes literally in their tracks. Some of the Freedom Fighter airplanes were literally taxiing down the runways. What? Are they nuts? Bellowed Brigade Air Force Chief Reed Doster when he heard the Kennedy canceled most of the vital airstrikes to destroy Castro's small air force before the invasion. Well, there goes the whole war. The canceled airstrikes made the brigade's lumbering B-26 bombers easy prey for Castro's jets and fast sea ferries, and the troops, the ships, and the supplies below them were even easier prey. It was a turkey shoot for the communists. The unequal battle raged furiously on the tiny beachhead. Where are the planes? Kept crackling over U.S. Navy radios 2 days later. Where's our ammo? Send the planes or we can't last. Brigade Commander Jose San Roman kept pleading to the very U.S. fleet that escorted his men to the beachhead. Crazed by hunger and thirst, his men had been shooting and reloading without sleep for 3 days. By then, many of them had suspected the truth. They'd been abandoned by the Knights of Camelot. And it was about that time when Castro's huge Soviet howitzers showed up. Big ones, 122-millimeter jobs, four batteries worth. They pounded 2,000 rounds into the Freedom Fighters over a four-hour period. By that time, the invaders were dazed, delirious with fatigue, thirst, hunger, too deafened by the bombardment to even hear orders. But these men were in no mood to emulate Rommel's crack Africa Corps by retreating. Instead, they were fortified by a resolve that no conquering troops could ever call upon: the burning duty to free their nation. You see, the term liberation was no abstraction to these men. No navel gazing about the merits of regime change for them. Sullen or hostile foreigners in sandals, beards, cafes, strange robes wouldn't be the ones meeting them. They'd be bashing open prison doors and bulldozing down barbed wire. But it would be their own fathers, their uncles, their cousins, even sisters, aunts, daughters. These would be the people staggering out to suffocate them with teary hugs and sobs. One of the 19 Cubans was a political prisoner that horrible year. Firing squads were murdering hundreds every week. Dozens of American citizens languished in Cuba's prison cells too. If things get rough, the heartsick CIA man Grayston Lynch radioed back, we can come in and evacuate you. We will not be evacuated, San Roman reared back. We came here to fight. We don't want evacuation. We want more ammo. We want planes. This ends here. It seemed like Castro's criminal idiocy had finally relented when President Kennedy allowed some Skyhawk jets to take off from the Essex, which was just offshore of the beachhead. One of these pilots quickly spotted a long column of Castro tanks and infantry making their way toward the Freedom Fighters. The Soviet tanks and trucks were sitting ducks. Now we'll turn this thing around. The pilot began to dive his airplane. The command came through his headphones. Permission to engage denied. This is crazy, the pilot yelled back. Those guys are getting the hell shot out of them down there. I can see it. Turned out JFK had allowed them to fly and look, but not to fly and shoot. Some of these battle-hardened Navy pilots admitted to sobbing openly in their cockpits. They were still choked up when they landed back on Essex. Now they slammed their helmets on the decks and broke down completely. I wanted to resign from the Navy, said Captain Bob Crutchfield, the decorated naval officer who commanded the fleet off the beachhead. He had to relay Washington's replies to those pilots. The Freedom Fighters' ammo inevitably forced them to retreat because they ran out. Castro's jets were roaming overhead at will, and tens of thousands of his Soviet-led and armed troops and armor were closing in. The Castro planes now flew concentrated on strafing the helpless, out-of-ammo freedom fighters. "We can't continue," Commander San Roman said again. "We have nothing left to fight with. We're out of ammo. Russian tanks are in view, destroying my equipment." When the smoke cleared and their ammo had been expended literally to the very last bullet, when 100 of them lay dead and hundreds more wounded after 3 days of relentless battle, barely 1,400 of them without air support, with U.S. carriers just offshore, and without a single supporting shot from naval gunfire, these 1,400 fellas squared off against 21,000 Soviet-led Castro troops, his entire air force, and squadrons of Soviet tanks. And the Cuban freedom fighters inflicted over 3,000 casualties on their Soviet-armed and Soviet-led enemies. "They fought magnificently and were not defeated," stressed Marine Colonel Jack Hawkins, a multi-decorated World War II and Korea vet who helped train them. "They were abandoned on the beach without the supplies and support promised by their sponsor, the United States government." 60 years ago this week. A lot of people think about Jack Kennedy and they think what many of them, what they were thought to think and what they were told to think. A young, good-looking, charismatic, dynamic, energetic president martyred, prime of life. The fact of the matter is, the guy just wasn't that great a chief executive. Did he make good decisions at some point? Yes. Yes, I'm not going to question that. And I'm not going to talk about those things, but this decision and the reticence and the blinking in front of communist Cuba, yeah, he screwed up. When he was a naval attaché, and PT-109, by the way, let's talk about that. You know, the reason he was sent to the Pacific was because as a naval attaché in Washington, D.C., his dad was Joe Kennedy. His dad, when the war started, was ambassador to the court of St. James. He was recalled because he lost his nerve and felt that England wouldn't be able to stand up against the Nazis. He's kind of sympathetic to the Nazi regime anyway. Kennedy was sleeping with a German spy in Washington. The FBI found out about it, and they it's Joe Kennedy's son. Oh, shit. Call the Navy Department. So, Jack was sent to the Pacific to get him the hell out of Washington, where he probably couldn't do much damage. Well, PT-109 in the fog, Jack trying to figure out exactly where he was. 109 gets cut in half by a Japanese destroyer. Now, he acquitted himself well in the aftermath of that disaster, but, it was kind of like his fault that he was there. I'm not exactly sure what would have happened if the fighter planes from Nicaragua could have come in and they would have been successful at taking down or negating Castro's own tiny little air force. And that would have left them open to the Skyhawks on Essex flying in and conducting strikes against the armor, against the trucks, against the troops. If they had landed in Trinidad, that little town of Trinidad, like they said they were going to, Cuba might be a wonderful place to vacay. And that prosperity and that freedom could have spread throughout said, and it could have been an important wedge. It could have been an important bulwark in stopping communist expansion through South America. And let me tell you something, guys. Communists are expanding in South America. They have been for decades. They're still there. The greatest planner of all planners. They had the plan. They had it. It was turnkey. All they had to do was follow it. And hopefully they had some competent commanders, because battle is oftentimes a very fluid thing, who would have been able to make snap decisions or snap judgments there in the field in case something went haywire, something went a little squirrely, and they had to, you know, because those things happen. You can take that plan and toss it right out the window once you put it in motion, because anything can happen, anything can go wrong. That's why you have competent commanders in the field to deal with that. But if they would have just left it alone, but these boys, the best and brightest as they were called, they thought they knew better than Eisenhower and the people that Eisenhower had assigned to plan this operation. They thought they knew better than the chief architect of D-Day. And we see the result. Not dead air, I'm still here. Oh, while I'm thinking about it, let me see if I can find this. In foreign policy news, the Prime Minister of Japan was here over the weekend talking with, let me see if I can find it. How do I have that down here? Oh, yeah. I'm just going to play it. I'm not going to say anything. Just this was from the joint presser with the Japanese Prime Minister.
And Yossi, I know how proud you are of the people of Japan are. And you've got a Japanese boy coming over here, and guess what? He won the Masters.
Damn, Japanese boy won the Masters.
He won the green jacket.
Japanese boy.
And Matsuyama was the first Japanese player to take home that green jacket at the Masters tournament this week. So let me say congratulations, Japan, as well on that feat.
They're really showing themselves to do really well. Come on, man.
Japanese boy. Yeah, Japanese boy won the Masters, man. Can you believe that? I don't know what his name is. Hell, I couldn't say it anyway. God. These are the foreign policy experts that are going to be meeting. Okay, and Kamala Harris is probably standing back there giggling the whole time. I think back to the 4 years when Donald and Melania Trump were meeting heads of state, when they conducted pressers. Got this Japanese boy, and guess what? He won the damn Masters. Can you believe that? Won the damn Masters. Japanese boy won the Masters. God damn. I still say he's not good. I just don't see the dude making it this summer. I really don't. I just, by the end of the summer, he's going to make an announcement, or handlers are going to make an announcement, or the Surgeon General is going to make an announcement. And that's going to be the end of it. And Joe's going to be lauded for sacrificing, for realizing that, you know, he couldn't stay in office, and that he bravely stepped aside because he loves the country so much. Oh, come on. Well, you don't think that's what they're going to say? Of course that's what they're going to say. But they're not going to say that we saw this coming, that we were waiting on this. They're going to say it hit suddenly, like, you know, Boom. What happened to him? Well, he got the 24-hour Alzheimer's.
What?
Yeah, 24 hours, my old man's mind is gone. It's gone. I reckon we're going to have to put old Round Heels in the Oval Office.
Damn.
And
say, he can't remember nothing?
No, not a thing. Thinks he's Teddy Roosevelt. Keeps wanting to run up the basement steps. Charge! Not dead air. George Washington proved to us what it took for the best to be president. Harry Truman proved to us that anybody could be president. Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and Joe Biden proved we don't need a president.
And we don't have one, guys. Okay, we don't have a president. You know this, right?
It's some central committee. This is like in the days when Brezhnev or Mao Zedong were still in power, and then they were old, and they didn't know, you know, they were like Biden. They didn't know what the hell they were doing. They didn't know what day it was. You had a group of handlers, a committee, who ruled as vice regents, I guess you'd call them, handlers. No different than what Jill Biden and Kamala Harris. He never goes anywhere without either one of those cats. Have you noticed that? Nowhere. She's close by, waiting to finish his sentences if he has trouble. That is kind of funny, Joe Biden thinking he's Teddy Roosevelt and running up the stairs singing at San Juan Hill. That's great. Not dead air, I'm still here. Japanese boy. Joe, I don't know how to break it to you, son. Japan is where Godzilla came from. Yeah, you know, they got this Japanese lizard, this little Japanese gecko. Guess what? He destroyed Tokyo. Yeah, we're, you know, you got to be really proud of that. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
I
Oh my God, Japanese boy. Japanese boy. Yeah. Japanese boy. These guys are idiots. And they're in the White House. They're idiots and they're in the White House. Let's take a minute. Breathe a little bit. Everybody's been worked up since the election. I'm worked up. You're worked up. Everybody is. We're worked up over the pandemic. We're worked up over the fact that our Constitution is being shredded in front of our very eyes. We're worked up over the fact that we've got idiots in the White House. We're worked up over the fact that progressive Marxist, cultural Marxists stole our election. Communists stole our election. Subverting the will of the people. Take a breath. Let's just take a breath.
America is a land of heroes. A place where greatness is born, where destinies are forged, and where legends come to life.
Damn
this
right.
is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt,
George!
Of many great generals, including Washington, Pershing, Patton, and MacArthur. This is the home of Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Amelia Earhart, Harriet Tubman, the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, and so many more. This is the country where children learn names like Wyatt Earp, Davy Crockett, and Annie Oakley. This is the place where the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth and where Texas Patriots made their last stand at the Alamo. The American nation was carved out of the vast frontier by the toughest, strongest, fiercest, and most determined men and women ever to walk on the face of the earth. Our ancestors braved the unknown, tamed the wilderness, settled the Wild West, lifted millions from poverty, disease, and hunger, vanquished tyranny and fascism, ushered the world to new heights of science and medicine, laid down the railroads, dug out the canals, raised up the skyscrapers. Our ancestors built the most exceptional republic ever to exist in all of human history, and we are making it greater than ever before. This is our glorious and magnificent inheritance. We are Americans. We are pioneers. We are the pathfinders. We settled the new world. We built the modern world. And we change history forever by embracing the eternal truth that everyone is made equal by the hand of Almighty God. America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. The American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising. God's grace is still shining. And my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come.
Asking fundamentally the same question I ask every time I play this. Name for me the Democrats saying these things. Have you ever heard Nancy Pelosi say anything like that? Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Chuckie Schumer, Jerry the Jowls Nadler? That guy. Have you ever seen anybody so stupid in all your life? Well, we only got a couple of minutes left, and I'm pretty much out of gas anyway. You have been listening to A Conservative Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio at blogtalkradio.com. We do it live twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, Eastern Standard Time. Thursday, I'm not exactly sure what's going on. Those of you who are familiar with our pal Mark Hoffman, his lovely wife, Bianca, has contracted COVID. Prayers for those who are inclined to do so, I'm sure, would be greatly appreciated. Hoffman is a great guy. We've been doing this for many, many years now, and I can't think of anybody better to be on the radio with, and I can't think of anybody better to listen to, unless maybe it was Gary Benford of United Patriots Uprising, or maybe me, maybe. But that's all the time we got. We have a recorded version of the show that goes out over the Mojo 50 radio network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, well, you should be. Some of the very best of libertarian and conservative talk radio out there. That's all the time we got, guys. Thanks so much for the opportunity to hang with you this evening and talk about some of this stuff. We'll be back on Thursday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you guys then. Take good care of yourselves.